Hi, I'm Trevor, and welcome to Catching Up on Cinema. If you aren't familiar with the program, Catching Up on Cinema is a film analysis podcast wherein we introduce each other to films, expand our cinematic horizons, and, in essence, catch up on our cinema. So it is the month of August, 2023, and it's once again that very special time of the month wherein we do our very special Catching Up on Blu-ray episode. So if you're not familiar with the show format is, a Catching Up on Blu-ray episode is basically my excuse to look at the physical media release date calendar and set aside any titles that I think are worthy of examination or potentially, in my case, purchase. So if you'd like to follow along with the home version of Catching Up on Blu-ray, you can do so by navigating to the lovely website of Blu-ray.com. And head to the /movies/release dates page, and then navigate to the August 2023 section. So also, again, if you're not familiar with how this generally works, DVDs, Blu-rays, and 4K releases generally occur on Tuesdays of each calendar week. So I will be certain to call out the release dates as we roll along. So it looks like our first major release date occurs, funny enough, on the 1st of August. So I guess that was a Tuesday. And generally, the way Blu-ray.com arranges their releases is by prioritizing the 4K titles. So don't be surprised if those come first. So our first major release on August 1st in 2023 comes in the form of James Gunn's Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, which did release this year in 2023. This is, of course, one of the most recent entries in the MCU. I'm not sure what the release schedule is going to be like going forward. I know the Marvels is due out at some point, but what with the strikes and whatnot, the writers and the actors strikes going on in Hollywood, not sure if they're going to be pushing that date or if it's going to be holding fast wherever it may fall. But I have yet to see this one, Guardians of the Galaxy 3. I liked the other two. I generally like James Gunn as a filmmaker, although I haven't seen everything he's done. Like, I haven't seen his very early work. Not his trauma stuff, not his stuff in between working for Disney. I did see Slither, and I was very impressed by that. I saw that in the theater, and I've seen it exactly one time, but that movie succeeded in both unnerving me and making me laugh in equal measure to a great degree. I was very impressed with that film, but there's certain imagery in there that I just was very uncomfortable with, such that it's very difficult for me. Like, the prospect of rewatching that film outside of, like, for podcasting reasons, that's a tall order for me. But for what it's worth, I really did like it a lot. I thought it was a quality film. Kyle, my regular co-host at Catching Up on Cinema, he told me Peacemaker, the HBO, or excuse me, Max series from Warner Brothers, is tremendous. He really liked it. And Kyle generally doesn't like superhero stuff, so that says quite a lot. I'll have to check that out. I still have not, but I was really taken aback by how much Kyle liked that. And also, it's worth pointing out again, Kyle, who doesn't generally like superhero films, as far as I know, he likes Guardians of the Galaxy 2. I don't remember if he feels the same about the first one. I know for a fact he hasn't seen the third one. But yeah, this is a movie that I own all the MCU movies on Blu-ray or 4K. I'm not a stickler about, like, keeping it all 4K and all that, like, keeping it consistent all the way through. I'm not about to start rebuying these movies. There's too many of these things for me to be doing that and pay my rent at the same time. But I inevitably end up buying all of these. In fact, that's lately been the pattern of how I consume these, is I blind buy them. I've lived by the assumption that these things are generally Marvel good these days. That's not a shining appraisal of the health of the franchise, but that is kind of where we're at right now, is that they're pretty consistently fine. Earlier entries in the MCU actually rose above and reached like very good to great. But if you ask me, it's probably been quite a while since we've had one of those, which is kind of sad. But James Gunn is, you know, he's one of the few directors that seems to be given a little bit of leeway by Marvel, by Disney, in terms of like having a creative voice and creative vision that still finds its way to the finished product in some capacity. I'm curious if that continues to be the case with this film. But yeah, I'm not hugely invested in the Guardians like cast of characters and whatnot, but it's like a warm blanket at this point. Like, I'm very familiar with all the characters. I did dabble in reading the comics many, many years ago. Dan Abnett and it was Abnett and Lanning were the authors. I consumed all of their Guardians of the Galaxy stuff from the 2000s, and it's good stuff. Not that the movies bear much of a resemblance to it at all, but yeah, I'll end up getting this at some point. I have zero hype going into it, unfortunately. And I guess it is worth pointing out, as far as I understand, this is James Gunn taking his final bow at Marvel. Because if you're not aware, he's basically the head of creative at the moment at Warner Brothers / DC. So he jumped ship and took the biggest seat at the table at the other company. So he basically got promotion in doing so. Hopefully it works out for him. As far as I know, we're still waiting to see what his vision for the DC cinematic universe is going to look like, but hopefully it works out for him. Moving on, we have Ferris Bueller's Day Off on 4K from 1986. This is, of course, a John Hughes film. I believe it had only previously come out on 4K in the form of a steelbook, so this is basically a debut on the format. This is a beloved mid-80s high school comedy. Very, very fun film. I like it quite a lot. It's been referenced countless times. It occupies that kind of space in pop culture history at this point, where it's like, even if you haven't seen it, there's certain images and like music cues and things of that nature that probably have found their way into things that you have experienced. So it's a big deal comedy release. I generally don't buy these kinds of movies though, but it is kind of cool that it's coming out on 4K. We have Rio Bravo on 4K from Warner Brothers. This came out in 1959 and is directed by Howard Hawks. That's a sign of quality generally. Stars John Wayne, Dean Martin. John Wayne and Dean Martin. Interesting cast. John Wayne was kind of banned in my household growing up. My mom really hated him. I think the only John Wayne movie I've ever seen is, I cannot confirm, but I think it's his last or one of his last, McHugh. I think that's literally the only John Wayne movie I've ever seen. And Rio Bravo, I know just the name carries a lot of weight. It's getting the 4K treatment. Looks like they handled it pretty well. It's going to be important to a lot of people, not me specifically. Nightbreed from 1990 is coming to 4K via Shout Factory. Looks like it got a 4 out of 5 in terms of image fidelity. This is directed by Clive Barker, directed and conceived by Clive Barker, so also written. And that's very, very, very important to the identity of the film. David Cronenberg actually serves as, he is in this film as an actor. Like, he's one of the chief antagonists in the film. The very, very interesting choice on the part of the production. David Cronenberg's a very interesting fella. And this is a very interesting film. As far as I understand it, I don't think it did very well at the box office, but in a lot of ways, I think of it as being almost analogous to X-Men in certain ways. When it comes to Clive Barker stories, it's impossible to view these things without dipping into subtext, and there most certainly is quite a lot. There is quite a lot of allegory going on with the, I think the society is called Midian. It's like this just below the surface society of like, quote, misfits and weirdos and mutants and whatnot. Huge exhibition of makeup effects, if you're into that sort of thing. Like, if the prospect of having large chunks of the runtime of a film being dedicated to people in all sorts of special effects makeup appeals to you, Nightbreed might scratch that itch. Similarly, I guess I would recommend Hellboy 2. Guillermo del Toro really did a fun thing in that by pushing the creature characters, like the again, the quote, like misfits and weirdos, like to the fore in terms of like who the movie is built around, as opposed to, quote, the normies. Not unlike what they did in that first Hellboy movie. But yeah, Nightbreed's an all right film. I wouldn't say it's an amazing film, but it was very, very ambitious, and it has Clive Barker's fingerprints all over it. So if you're into all that, check it out. We got Cinderella on 4K. This movie is from 1950. I never would have known that when I was a kid watching this growing up. But really, the only reason I'm highlighting this one is because Disney seems to be really pushing hard to get out of the physical media game. So I imagine this is like Ultimate Collector's Edition. Might be like a limited release or some shit. It looks like they handled the release quite well, though. I watched Cinderella a fair bit when I was a kid. Never like a favorite, but it was on at a lot of houses I hung out at, like when I was a little kid. So very, very familiar title. Not particularly beloved for me. East of Eden is coming to 4K from Warner Brothers. This is from 1955, and this holds the distinction of being one of, I believe, the three movies that James Dean starred in his very, very, very short, but very, very, very impactful career in Hollywood. Funny enough, I have nothing to say about this movie because I haven't seen it, unfortunately, but funny enough, James Dean came up in conversation just a couple of days ago. After dinner with the girlfriend, somehow the topic of Hollywood hot guys came up, and the conclusion we arrived at was that, from the girlfriend's perspective, James Dean might be the hottest guy that Hollywood has ever produced. I was very surprised. I didn't expect that. But young Clint Eastwood also was up there. I pushed pretty hard for Toshiro Mifune. She was like, okay, like, I'll grudgingly accept that. Like, she managed to find a couple of photos of him, like, cleaned up with, like, greased back hair with a goofy smile. And she's like, okay, he's hot. But yeah, James Dean, he was, like, top of the list for her specifically. I threw a lot of dudes at her. Like, I threw a lot of names at her. I was like, Montgomery Clift, he's not interested in you. But look at him. Like, he is aesthetically pleasing. She was like, yeah, he's all right. We went through a very long list. I wish I had recorded that conversation, actually. It was a lot of fun. Anyway, moving on. Two Guns from 2013, starring Denzel Washington and Mark Wahlberg, Marky Mark, is coming to 4K. This comes to us from Icelandic director, what's-his-face, Baltasar Kormákur. I think he's from Iceland. If memory serves, he's the fellow that did Everest, which I did see in the theater. That was an intense experience. Not a bad movie that never gets talked about. I've always been curious about Two Guns because I get it confused with other movies for some reason. And I have no idea if it's good or bad, but it is, I don't know what it is with this movie, but I want to say it's maybe the most common, one of the most common Blu-rays I find in like the $2 bin or the $5 bin at like used media stores. It's Two Guns. And funny enough, Shooter. Shooter and a lot of the Bourne movies and like some of the shittier X-Men movies are very, very common in bargain bins that I go to anyway. So I guess Marky Mark from this era of film, like he destined for the bargain bin. Shooter and Two Guns. The Big Lebowski is coming to 4K. This is, of course, the Coen Brothers film from 1998. Let me see if this was released previously, because it looks like, it looks like there was a 20th anniversary edition released on 4K that, let's see if it marks any differently. So this one got a 5 out of 5, that is the 20th anniversary edition, and this one appears to be labeled as the Universal Essentials Collection. So I want to say this is just a packaging thing, so we'll move on. Because that's a whole big can of worms that if I don't have to talk about, I won't. And I am going to try to keep this episode brief as best I can, because this is my third day in a row of recording, and I've been sick all three of those days. And yeah, my throat is not happy about what I'm doing to it. We have About My Father from 2023. This comes to us from Der Lionsgate. I'm surprised there's no guns on the cover. Lionsgate putting out a movie with no guns or slashers on the cover? Very disappointed. This is the Sebastian Maniscalco vehicle. Excuse me, I almost said pilot. Featuring him and Bobby D, Robert De Niro. No idea if it's any good. I do know that he's a very popular stand-up comedian. Never seen his material. Can't say anything about it, really. But it is what it is. We have something called Going All the Way coming to us from Kino from 1997. After returning home from the Korean War, two young men search for love and fulfillment in Middle America. Directed by Mark Pellington, featuring Jeremy Davies, Ben Affleck, and Rachel Weisz in 1997. That'll work. I don't know anything about it, but interesting cast. Like the cover art as well. We have a two-pack of the FX films from 1986 to 1991. Those feature Brian Brown and I think it's Brian Brown or it's Ryan Brown. I always fuck up his name. It's Brian Brown. Yeah, Brian Brown and Brian Dennehy. Two Brians. My dad was and is. I always refer to my dad in the past tense for some reason. He's still alive. Just in case anybody's curious. My dad is very much still alive. My dad likes the FX films. He had me watch the first one. I've never seen the second one, but he had me watch the first one when I was pretty young because I was really into special effects and stuff, and he told me about Stan Winston and some of the other special effects gurus of the day. So he figured I would like it, and I really did. FX rules. We have Invaluable, : The True Story of an Epic Artist, : Standard Edition from 2014. This is a documentary about, actually I have to look up the name of the fella, sorry, Tom Sullivan, who is a special effects artist who is credited for achieving a lot of the effects shots in Sam Raimi's Evil Dead. That could be an interesting documentary. I always like when you get into like the minutia of the filmmaking, when you shed the share spotlight in unusual places, such as a special effects guy on an ultra low budget film. The only reason I'm highlighting this one is because this was really funny to me how this worked out. River Wild, just River Wild from 2023 comes to us from Universal Studios, arrives on Blu-ray. Featuring Adam Brody, Leighton Meester, Taron Killam. Leighton Meester sounds very, very familiar, but that feels like a name I've not heard since. So the reason why this is funny, and it's not actually that funny, it's just it gives me a chuckle, is Kyle and I reviewed The River Wild, the Meryl Streep and Kevin Bacon headlined film from the 90s, this month. And I had neither of us had any idea that they were remaking it, let alone calling it the same thing, except for dropping the Fast and Furious style. It apparently released just under the radar, like a week or two before we talked about it, and it never popped onto my radar. So. As far as I can tell, it's garbage. I watched the trailer. It looked dull. It looked dull as dishwater, but, you know, it is what it is. They remade The River Wild. Nobody cares. Moving on. It looks like Funimation is re-releasing all of their Dragon Ball Z, the quote, season Blu-ray packages. I know there existed a complete box set of all of these, but I have discovered like through various channels that apparently Funimation has been going back and like redubbing and tweaking Dragon Ball Z, like their releases of Dragon Ball Z material in recent days. So I don't know what's going on here, if it's like a copyright issue, because I know there exist multiple dubs of Dragon Ball Z, and I know licensing of animation, like Japanese animation in particular, is a really litigious and scary business. For instance, Macross / Robotech, mostly Macross, is notoriously difficult to get licensed or distributed in the U.S. because apparently somebody bought the rights to it decades ago and has been squatting on them, such that I saw a thing on Twitter the other day, or X, excuse me, where apparently some advertising materials for a Japanese Macross, like phone game or something, had to be tweaked to remove certain characters for distribution in the U.S. region because of said company flexing its copyright muscles and whatnot. So I don't know exactly why this is being done, why these Dragon Ball Z Blu-rays are being reprinted, but I have to assume some sort of change is occurring, because I have been seeing them dip off of the older prints of them dip off the market. I'd like to actually get to the bottom of this, like actually know what's going on, because believe it or not, this is actually something I've considered picking up at some point. I was super heavily invested in Dragon Ball Z at a certain point in my life. I have not kept up at all. Haven't watched GT. Have only watched the movies of Super. Have zero intention of watching any of the series of Super, but I would like to do a front-to-back rewatch of Dragon Ball Z as an adult at some point in my life, just for this nostalgia factor. I'll probably love it, honestly, especially if I watch it in the original Japanese, because the music of the original Japanese broadcast version of Dragon Ball Z is special. That was actually one of my biggest complaints about the American English broadcast version of Dragon Ball Z, was the fact that they changed the music. Was it Bruce Falconer, I think, did the music? A lot of people on the internet are really, really into that. Like to them, that like shapes their childhood. It shapes their nostalgia. But for me, like, maybe it's because my earliest exposure to Dragon Ball came in the form of the original Japanese version and that particular sound. But honestly, it's just, I think for me, it's almost like an objective quality thing where it's like, dude, this is good and this is bad. I don't know what you guys are talking about. So, Dragon Ball Z is a someday, not today, but I'm very curious as to why they're reprinting these. By the way, Cocaine Crabs from Outer Space from year 2002, limited edition of 200 made, is also getting a Blu-ray release on August 1st. Not the same font, but very clearly the title cover art is meant to be evocative of Cocaine Bear. Mockbusters will always exist. It's science. Moving on, though, our next release date occurs on August 8th of 2023, and our first major title comes to us from, I believe, MVD Visual, and this is a 4K release of Swamp Thang. Swamp Thang! Directed by Wes Craven. I don't think this movie's very good. It has some interesting people in it, for sure, but it's kind of meandering. The action isn't very good. The final confrontation with the monster at the end is downright laughable, unless you're a small child, which if you are, you probably shouldn't be watching this movie, because it does have its moments of intensity. But we got Adrian Barbeau in there, and we got Ray Wise, who I believe he serves as the actor, Alec, I think is the name of the character, like Alec who becomes Swamp Thing. He's in the film in the early goings, but if memory serves, I think he only serves as the voice of the Swamp Thing from there on out. At which point, I'm not sure if it began with this film, but for some reason I'm aware of this, probably because I watched a lot of like TBS and TNT when I was a kid, and the USA Network for that matter. But Dick Durock, I believe, was the man in the Swamp Thang costume. And I think he was the Swamp Thang, like in both of the movies and the TV series, maybe even that damn cartoon, who knows, but I'm not positive. I'm not sure when he assumed the mantle of the Thang, but Dick Duroc is the name of the guy who wears the Swamp Thang outfit at some point. Probably from the second one on, maybe from the first. I don't fucking know. I'm done talking about Swamp Thang. I didn't like it very much. Second one has some camp factor and better makeup effects. Like, the monster effects are better in that one, but it's missing energy. Like it's missing a little something to make it really sing, which is unfortunate. Because everybody loves Swamp Thang. If you're into superhero comics, if you read your DC comics and whatnot, Swamp Thang has a lot to offer. Not in cinema, but in comics, Swamp Thing rocks. Moving on, we have Enter the Dragon getting a 4K release from Warner Brothers. This is getting 4.5 out of 5 in terms of image fidelity. This was previously released on Blu-ray, I believe, via the Criterion box set of Bruce Lee's works. But this 4K apparently is a very, very handsome package, and also it is a anniversary release of the film, which I do believe recently got a limited theatrical re-release to celebrate its anniversary. I already have the Criterion box set, so I'm not about to buy a whole ass blue like 4K just for this movie. But it's cool that it's getting a 4K release, because its cultural impact is felt far and wide. It's most certainly deserving of it, especially on an anniversary year. So that's good on you, Warner Brothers. Beside that, we have Fast X coming to us on 4K and Blu-ray. This comes to us from Universal Studios. This came out in theaters in the year 2023 as well. Looks like it has collector's edition listed on the cover. I know most of the recent Fast and Furious movies have had like extended director's cuts or uncut versions available, sometimes on the disc, but at least one of them I remember being outraged by the fact that the extended cut of the film was only available via the digital copy of the film included like on the piece of paper insert. The code for which was included on a piece of paper insert in the box. I was like, are you fucking serious? I'm not even going to bother with that, and I never will. I don't know if they have any alternative cuts for this one, though. I've heard not great things about this one. I feel like this franchise is, I hate having to say this, but almost out of gas or running low on gas. God damn it, I hate when I do that. It's never intentional, but, you know, language is tricky like that. But I have been thoroughly invested in these films pretty much since Fast 5. I think that's a jumping on point for a lot of people, because that does represent a pretty remarkable spike upward in quality for a franchise. It's very rare that a franchise hits its stride in its fifth go. But the Fast series, if you ask me, kind of did that. Which is shocking, but unfortunately, like, it's never quite reached that high ever since then. A lot of people like 6 and 7 as well. I really like 6. I think it's neck and neck with 5. 7, I found too many issues with, unfortunately, a lot of which had to do with the passing of Paul Walker. Like, I hate to say that, but it's kind of like the whole COVID movie thing, where you just get this stink of there being something wrong with the product that you're watching. I got that, and it was hard for me to turn that off when I was watching that film, which is not a bad film, but I do think it's a step down from 6. But ever since then, 8 and 9, no good. Hobbs and Shaw, no good. So I'm attached to this franchise. I'm invested, kind of similar to how the MCU works. It's like I'll tune in, but I'm not excited anymore. And I don't see this getting any better by the time it wraps up, which is really sad. But I have this one in the mail. I'll probably be getting it like today, maybe tomorrow or something. So I'll probably end up watching this over the weekend. At which point, I guess you can check out my Letterboxd if you want to know my star rating, because I am not doing a full ass review for this, not for the show. Little Nicky is coming to Blu-ray. I have to assume this received a Blu-ray previously. This is the Adam Sandler film from the year 2000. And it looks like Looks like maybe no. Maybe it is debuting on the format. That's kind of a surprise. But yeah, this is from the year 2000. A lot of people don't like this one. I like it. I like Little Nicky. I don't have any problems with Little Nicky. I still say Super Devil Juice all the time. I use the phrase Super Devil Juice all the fucking time. So at the very least, it gave me that. Leave Little Nicky alone. Akira Kurosawa's Dreams comes to us from Criterion. This is a 4K release from the year 1990. I remember seeing this for school at some point. Absolutely beautiful film. The title is very apt. It's comprised of several vignettes. As far as I know, there's really no connective tissue between all of them, but it's largely just kind of a ethereal visual experience. And I remember some cool shit being in this one. Definitely going to sell very well. Kurosawa is, Kyle and I joked at one point that it's like, almost feels as if the House of Criterion was built on the shoulders of Kurosawa, where it's like, in their earliest days of distribution, it seems like that's what they existed to do, was to ensure that his work, like not the cinema of Japan, but just it's like this man's work needs to be seen by more people. So he's intrinsically tied in with the Criterion brand. So it's only fitting that he would get a 4K release of eventually, hopefully, all of his stuff. I'm not going to talk about all of these, but I would like to point out that the Lionsgate seems to be putting out a whole host of popular 80s and 90s films, mostly 80s films, but also apparently 2000s, because The Mist is lumped in there as well. A whole bunch of like pulpy variant covers for very, very popular films, like The Gate, The Mist, Highlander, kind of all over the place, but these cover arts look like a combination. Like, they look like Tales from the Crypt meets Goosebumps or some shit. They're meant to be pulpy. I don't know what the marketing initiative is. Maybe they're gearing up for Halloween. That would be my guess, actually, that they're hoping to get some people to bite for like the Halloween season or something, because a lot of these seem to be kind of supernatural kind of themed, although Highlander isn't really a Halloween title. So I don't know what the fuck they're doing over at Lionsgate. Maybe they're just faffing about until John Wick 5 inevitably gets put into production. We have The Angry Black Girl and Her Monster coming to us from RLJ Entertainment. This is from the year 2023, so it's a contemporary release. I think I saw like a poster for that somewhere online. I don't know if its reputation is good or bad, but it exists. We have Night of the Assassin, again from the year 2023. This is a Korean film. Do I recognize anybody in the cast? No, I don't, so I'm going to move on. I would call it out, though, if I recognized a name or two there. And that's about it for the week. So I'm actually just going to move on to the next week. I'm not going to pretend that any of these other titles mean anything to me. So August 15th is our next week on the calendar. And we have a big one. We have Roman Holiday arriving on 4K. And it looks like it got a 4 out of 5 in terms of image quality, which is kind of unfortunate. If memory serves, I think this was a big deal release from Paramount when it came to Blu-ray via the Paramount Presents label. I think that was the case. I could be wrong on that. But this is Audrey Hepburn and Gregory Peck from 1953. And this is the 70th anniversary edition arriving on 4K. So for collectors of film, that is going to be a big fucking deal. Not for me personally, but for a lot of people out there, that's going to be a big deal. We have Asteroid City coming only to Blu-ray, not 4K. This is from Universal. Looks like it got a 4.5 out of 5 in terms of image quality. And this is, of course, Wes Anderson's most recent film. With a cast so goddamn long, I can't even begin to digest it. This movie, like all Wes Anderson films, looks very aesthetically pleasing. The coordination of the shots and the color arrangement and the production design are just completely on point, as tends to be the case when you're dealing with him. I would very much like to see this. I did not catch it in theaters, but Wes Anderson's name carries quite a lot of weight, in particular with my regular co-host, Kyle. He really likes Wes Anderson quite a lot more than myself, but what little I have seen of the man's work, I appreciate quite a lot. So not one that I'll be buying, but definitely one that if I find the right excuse to check it out, I would love to watch it. We have from Radiance Films a box set, a very handsome box set featuring a very handsome man, Cosa Nostra, Franco Nero in Three Mafia Tales by Damiano Damiani. The Day of the Owl, The Case is Closed, Forget It, and How to Kill a Judge. If you're not familiar with Franco Nero, I'm not like a connoisseur of his work. Like I've seen a couple of movies he's done, but I know him for, I think it's like Enter the Ninja from Canon Films, where he plays the most Italian ninja that ever ninja'd. He also, I believe, is, what is he, the bad guy general from Die Hard 2, I think? Could be wrong on that, but Franco Nero is cool. He's just cool. Like, don't ask questions. I don't know a whole lot about him, but every time I see him, he's cool. For fuck's sake, he even shows up in John Wick 2. He's just sitting, he's just chilling in the lobby in Rome. He's just like, yo, I'm Franco Nero. I got a ponytail. I'm awesome. And everybody's just like, yeah, you really are. We'll shut up and stop fighting. Radiance Films is one of those labels that they're kind of a recent arrival in my region in the U.S., so I'm always looking for an excuse to dip my toes into their library. Have yet to find that excuse, but this appears to be a very handsome package. We have Babylon 5, The Road Home on 4K coming to us from Warner Brothers. And this is an animated film. What the fuck? So Babylon 5... Oh, J. Michael Straczynski is credited as a writer, as the writer for this. Okay, as far as I know, he was maybe the showrunner or the head writer for the original run of Babylon 5, which was not a like a hugely sprawling sci-fi series, but it had a couple of iterations. I think they had like that Rangers something or other and maybe some video games or some shit. But Babylon 5 was always like that other sci-fi, that other space opera show or whatever, where it's like there's Star Trek and then Babylon 5's over there too. I mostly know it from Noah Antweiler, Spoonie. We love you, Spoonie. Miss you, Spoonie. I watched a lot of Spoonie content back in the day, and I remember him talking about Babylon 5 a lot because he was he always has been very, very contrarian. I am too in a lot of ways. So even though he was really, really into Star Trek, he was that guy who was also like perhaps even more into Babylon 5, but he didn't have anybody to talk with about Babylon 5. So like Babylon 5 is for the true hardcores. It's like AEW fans as opposed to WWE. It's like, oh, I'm into wrestling, but I'm into that wrestling. I'm into that wrestling over there. Not like the super mainstream wrestling. It's okay. I'm not being harsh to anybody. People like what they like, to leave them alone. But I have zero firsthand experience with Babylon 5, but it's just very, very shocking to me that an animated film based on a largely forgotten sci-fi series from the 90s comes out in 2023 on fucking 4K. Sure. We have Is Paris Burning from 1966 from Kino Lorber. That is not Paris Is Burning, which is, of course, about runway culture in drag runway culture in New York? That's a documentary that a good friend of mine told me about. I still haven't watched that, but he made it sound pretty interesting. That is Paris Is Burning. This is Paris Burning. That's literally the only reason I highlight is so I could make that stupid comparison / joke. We have yet another Hotel Transylvania film, Transformania, from the year 2022. Sure, it's coming to us on Blu-ray. We have the Bert Kreischer headlined and also Mark Hamill co-starring, and hey, Jimmy Tatro's in there as well. And everybody's favorite British bodybuilder, Martin Ford, is in there as well. The Machine, from the year 2023. This was a box office flop in its theatrical run, as far as I know. I don't know how well it's done on home video and on streaming. I bet you, just a wild guess, I bet you it's cleaned the fuck up at the Red Box. That's just a guess based on demographics. But anyway... my regular co-host, Kyle, he often listens to Bert Kreischer and Tom Segura's podcast. So I occasionally get stories about Bert Kreischer's shenanigans. I don't really follow the man. I get it all just secondhand from my buddy Kyle. We bantied about the idea of perhaps talking about this movie, about perhaps reviewing The Machine. Time will tell as to whether or not that happens, but it exists. I didn't think it would. I really didn't, but it's here. It actually has people in it that I like. So haven't seen it. Won't see it unless I have to for the podcast. We have The Wrath of Becky from the year 2023, which is the sequel to Becky, which stars Lulu Wilson and Sean William Scott, who I guess is the villain in this film. Was it Kevin James, I believe, was the villain in the first one. This comes to us from director Matt Angel, or perhaps Matt Angel, not entirely certain on the pronunciation. Looking at his filmography, I'll be honest, kind of worried. Don't really see a whole lot in here that I'm intrigued by. Although, what's this? Natural Disasters from the year 2020. Nope, not interested. So don't know. I haven't seen any of the Becky films, but I do know that my buddy Brad over at the Cinema Speak podcast, he had a fun back and forth with the directors of the original Becky, who are not directing this film, unfortunately. But because of that fun exchange, I always keep my eyes out for Becky related content these days. We have Junkhead from the year 2017 coming to us from Synergetic. Let's see if they have put out any other discs, because that is not a label I recognize. They have a handful of other titles under their belt, none of which I recognize. So Junkhead, I don't know a whole lot about. I remember catching some clips of it, though, many years ago. It did come out originally in 2017. This is a Japanese stop-motion animated film that I guess, similar to Phil Tippett's Mad God, has kind of been floating around in dark corners of the internet for a while now, and hey, it got a release in my region. So I might end up picking this up, because the production design and the animation quality were truly unique, and I have a particular affinity for stop motion animation, so this is in my wheelhouse. I might actually blind buy that. We have yikes, a lot of crap is what I'm seeing here. So I'm not going to pretend to be interested in this just wall of garbage, and I'm just going to skip on down to the next week. So we got August 22nd, 2023, and our first major release is a 4K version, a Ultimate Collector's Edition of Tim Burton's A Nightmare Before Christmas. The Nightmare Before Christmas, excuse me, which is, of course, not actually directed by Tim Burton. It's directed by Henry Selick, but partially written by Tim Burton, and I have to assume he did quite a lot of the design work as well, probably served as a chief producer on the product as well, but just... you need to remember how big the Tim Burton brand was in 1993. But yeah, Henry Selick actually directed this film. This was a phenomenon. It was enormous. This movie was everywhere for a while, and, you know, has kept Hot Topic in business for decades. I haven't seen it since it came out in theaters, but my dad occasionally busts out the This Is Halloween song, usually around, like, Christmas time. So at least, like, if my dad remembers some of the lyrics of the songs from your movie, that means they were kind of catchy. I would love to rewatch this one come Halloween time or Christmas time. It really has been probably 30 years since I've seen it. But yeah, it's coming out on 4K. Arrow is putting out a 4K release of both the theatrical and extended cuts of Weird Science from the year 1985 on 4K. This is another John Hughes movie. And weirdly enough, I've never seen this one. I have had some gifts from it tossed at me, usually from Kyle in the form of Bill Paxton as a shit monster. But I've never actually seen this movie. I did, however, watch some of the TV show from the 90s that was on one of those cable networks, TBS, TNT, USA, one of those. I did actually watch that. And I think it was like Kelly LeBrock, I think, was the lady. Yeah, Kelly LeBrock, a.k.a. the former Mrs. Seagal, was the, a.k.a. Don't Hate Me Because I'm Beautiful. She was the main lady in the movie. However, in the TV show, I don't know the actress's name, but I'm pretty sure it was the lead actress from Kingpin was playing her character for the TV version. But yeah, weirdly enough, I if you didn't know, now you know, there was a Weird Science TV show in the 90s that I watched sometimes when I could stay up late enough. Shout Select is putting out a 4K of Hackers, which is a beloved techno thriller slash cyberpunk movie from the mid-90s that I also have not seen. But I do know that, especially these days, it seems to get quite a lot of nostalgia and ironic love, just because of how audacious it is, and how wild and crazy its perception of technology is, like the way it presents its ideas of future tech and stuff. I would love to go back and rewatch this, watch this for the first time. I just haven't really found the right opportunity. I know we did a techno thriller month not that long ago here at Catching Up on Cinema, but for some reason, I was deliberately avoiding doing Hackers just because I wanted to keep it more grounded. I don't really have a good explanation, but Hackers is definitely one that we'll check out someday. The Legend of Zorro from the year 2005 is coming to us from Sony on 4K. Ooh, ouch. 3 out of 5 in terms of image quality. You don't want to see that on your 4K discs. Oh, no. I didn't know that Martin Campbell directed this. That upsets me, because this movie is not very good. It has a lot of really cool people involved in it, but The Mask of Zorro, it is not. And if you ask me, a lot of why it sucks is because of that damn kid. The kid was all over the marketing, so it had a lot of red flags flying up for me before I went to see it, but The Mask of Zorro is a tremendous film, and The Legend of Zorro, it's just like, why are we here? Like, why are we doing this to ourselves? Like, this is not the right direction to take this. I really didn't care much for The Legend of Zorro. I was hoping somebody else directed it, because he also did The Mask of Zorro, and he kicked ass doing that. Everybody has their stumbles. I didn't realize that he had that and Green Lantern probably. I'm not looking at his filmography right now, but I have to assume those were pretty close together. So it's a reason why he's not getting the big gigs these days. Ouch. We have a special edition of Coma from 1978 coming to us from Shout Factory. I know this movie from its cover art of all the people hanging from the ceiling. And also, I think it's referenced on Seinfeld, but that's literally the extent of my knowledge of the film. We have another Radiance Films release, this one a Chinese film, A Moment of Romance from 1990, only pointing it out because it comes to us from Radiance, and again, I'm keeping my eyes on their filmography, just curious. We have The Blackening from 2023 coming to us on both 4K and Blu-ray. I heard mixed things about this one. I didn't check it out. But I did catch a couple of reviews here and there. We have a Metalocalypse movie, apparently. Metalocalypse, : Army of the Doomstar, from the year 2023. And this is an 83-minute long feature film, apparently. I have never dipped my toes into Metalocalypse or most of late-night Adult Swim content, for that matter. But I do have at least one friend out there, an old friend, who was really into Metalocalypse. So I'm sure he's seen this wherever he is. We have Bo Widerberg's New Swedish Cinema coming to us from Criterion. That is a set including works from 1963 to 1969. We have You Hurt My Feelings from Lionsgate Films. This is directed by Nicole Holofcener and stars and David Cross is in there, and Julia Louis-Dreyfus, and Tobias Menzies is in the starring role, apparently. I don't know about this film, but you know, David Cross and Julia Louis-Dreyfus could do a lot worse. We have Spirit Halloween: The Movie from 2022. Is this a documentary? No, it's a feature film featuring Christopher Lloyd and Rachel Lee Cook. What? Okay, that exists. I'm going to move on, though, because I don't see anything else that interests me at the moment. I will point out that Lionsgate is putting out a host of horror films this week, all of which have alternative cover art placing like horror icons front and center on the covers. So we have the Jigsaw doll from Saw. We have Richard Brake from 31. We have Ghostface from Scream. We have I think it's the fish lady from Cabin in the Woods, and Candyman. We got Candyman. Yeah, we got Tony Todd as Candyman, covered with bees, because that's what you want to see on your shelf. Tony Todd covered in bees looking down at you. It's not going to give you nightmares. Okay, so let's move on to the next week. I think this is our last week, which means I'm going to blow out my throat trying to call out all of the Vinegar Syndrome and Vinegar Syndrome partner label releases, because they Blu-ray.com has this thing where they like to cram all of them into the final week of each month. Very frustrating. Wish they would reorganize it a little bit, especially in terms of like labeling these things properly, but we love Blu-ray.com. First major release is a proper Vinegar Syndrome release, and it is one that I actually know, which I can't say is the case all the time. This is Gorgo from 1961. It is a 4K Blu-ray. As I said, it's from Vinegar Syndrome, and this is directed by Eugene Laurie, and this is a British film. Gorgo, I have a very long history with. And I've told this story before, so I'll try to keep it short. When I was a kid, a VHS tape called Fantastic Dinosaurs of the Movies, that I think I got it on like Easter or some shit. Like it was in an Easter basket or something along with candy. I watched that tape many, many times when I was young. And what it was a compilation video of B-movie trailers for various B-movies from like the 1950s through the 70s or through the 60s of like dinosaur related movies. And it was the old fashioned trailers, like the original run trailers for all of them, just like back to back to back to back. And I loved it. I learned so much about B-movie cinema and about monster movies and stuff from that tape. I don't know who got that from me, probably my dad. But I owe a lot to that tape, if I'm being honest. Like, that shaped me in a kind of unique way. And Gorgo was featured on that tape. And the trailer for it looked great, to the point, and a lot of those movies look great, to the point that I somehow got my dad to, like, track down some of those old B-movies and, like, rent them. Or I don't know how we acquired a lot of these movies, because I know I saw Reptilicus at some point, which, again, was on that tape. I know we watched them together when I was a kid. That is the giant radioactive ant movie. And Gorgo, we actually had on VHS. I think my dad borrowed it from the library and maybe copied it or something, because we had a tape of Gorgo. And I have no idea how we got that tape, but I watched it a lot, along with countless Godzilla movies. Godzilla was my favorite and always will be, but Gorgo, I was at that stage in my life where I was ready to date other people, you know? I had to branch out a bit. So I was like, let's go see what this British lizard's up to. Like, let's see what this giant lizard with shitty teeth is up to. It's like, oh, you're peas and potatoes, huh? That's great. But yeah, Gorgo's great. Gorgo is the quintessential... Okay, I don't have the words to put this together off the cuff, but if you know the plot to Jaws 3, which most certainly came out after this, because remember, this came out in 1961, there is a subgenre of monster movie wherein the plot is centered around humanity contacting some sort of exotic creature, usually a giant menace, and taking away the offspring or doing harm to the offspring, doing something to like a child who then it is later discovered has a parent who comes for revenge or comes to rescue them. I'm struggling to find a succinct way of expressing that, so I apologize for that, but The plot of the Peter Benchley, The Beast, the TV version of that movie, which I seriously doubt anybody listening to this has seen. I own it. I've seen it countless times. I watched a recorded from television VHS of it again a lot when I was young. That is something I'd like to review someday for Catching Up on Cinema. Peter Benchley's The Beast, the TV version, basically has the same plot as Gorgo. So the plot of Gorgo is... there's a small creature that humanity comes into contact with. They catch it. They put it up in a circus kind of situation, similar to like exhibiting King Kong or something. And then, oh shit, Big Mama Gorgo shows up, and Big Mama Gorgo is like 12 times the size of Baby Gorgo, who was already the size of a bus. So Big Mama Gorgo shows up, takes out Big Ben, stomps through London, and it's a grand old time. Like, it's from the early 60s, so it the pace kind of dips here and there, but the special effect quality is pretty high. And also, like, I haven't seen Gorgo since I was a little kid. I may actually buy this 4K, but looking at it, like, just reviewing the film in my head as an adult, I see things now that I didn't have the capacity to understand when I was young. And what I'm alluding to specifically here is like the destruction sequences and how they're choreographed, and the things that they express in the destruction scenes, because it feels very intentional through the lens of an adult, not through the lens of a kid who didn't know history and stuff. So what I'm alluding to here is the Brits got hit pretty fucking hard in World War II. The Blitz was a thing. Air raids, bombings were a thing. And a lot of that involved structures collapsing at the drop of a hat, and brickwork and stone and buildings falling on people and stuff, just on the daily. And this was the reality for a couple of generations of people, many of whom more than likely worked on this film. More than likely were on the production. So what I'm getting at is there's a lot of stuff that you see in the destruction scenes in Gorgo that you don't often see in your average giant monster movie. And a lot of that includes every step Gorgo takes, every building that gets knocked over by Gorgo. It doesn't just go down like a clean demolition. It gets spilled over, and they deliberately show you shots of people getting crushed by wreckage and falling debris and stuff. And it feels like, oh yeah, again, this is a movie made by people who survived the Blitz. That tracks. That makes sense. That it would make sense that those would be the kinds of things that they would choose to represent in their film. So doesn't quite have the same, like, I guess, emotional punch as Gojira, as like the original Godzilla, but it's got something going for it. It's just, that's not why you watch the movie. Like, the reason why you watch Gorgo is for entertainment. It's not like a super dark allegory movie or anything like that. It's entertainment, and it's quality entertainment. So yeah, Gorgo gets high marks from me. I think I might buy this 4K, because obviously I remember the film very, very well, even though I haven't seen it in probably, I don't know, almost 30 years or some shit. We have Terror at 10 Killer from 1986, also getting a 4K. Have to assume that's also a Vinegar Syndrome. We have Psycho Girls, also from 1986. We have a whole bunch of 4K releases of Child's Play films, late era Child's Play films. Who is putting these out? Shout Factory is putting out 4K releases of a lot of the late era Child's Play films. So from Bride of Chucky onward. I don't know if that's a rights issue or what the story is there, but 3 Days of the Condor is coming to us on 4K from 1975. This is a dad-ass dad movie. This is debuting on the format, as far as I can tell. This is a Sydney Pollack film starring Robert Redford, Faye Dunaway, Max von Sydow, or Sydow. I'm not sure on the pronunciation there, but I have seen this film. My dad loves this film because, again, it's a dad-ass dad film. I don't need to own it, but I have seen it. So at least I can lay claim to that. The Flash is nestled in here. It seems like it's trying to hide amongst all the Chucky films. But yeah, the Warner Brothers flop that is The Flash, which I'm not sure about that title, man. Like if you're going to base so much of your marketing on things that are not Flash related, maybe don't call it The Flash. Maybe call it The Flash colon something or other, or The Flash in something or other. Don't be deceptive. Directed by Andy Muschietti, who of course made Warner Brothers a whole mountain of money with his It films, It Chapter 1 and It Chapter 2, the Stephen King films. This movie apparently gets a 4.5 out of 5 in terms of image quality, as it should, I guess. The internet had a lot to say about this movie, and I'm curious, but also not. Like, I'm sorry, I can't get it up for The Flash. I never have been able to. Like, I talked about Guardians of the Galaxy earlier. There was a time in my life where I was heavily invested in comic books and whatnot. I read a fuck ton of Marvel and DC for most of my life, honestly. I only put it aside because I realized I was spending too much money on it and something I had to give. But never at any point in my decades of reading comic books did I ever give two fucks about The Flash. So to give me a whole ass movie about The Flash and then not have the confidence to actually make a Flash movie. It's like, no, we're going to make a multiverse movie and like put Batman all over the marketing and stuff. It's like, you know what that tells me, Warner Brothers? That tells me you don't have confidence in The Flash. And you know what? That's not good, because I don't have confidence in The Flash. And if you're the people putting up $300 million to make The Flash, so maybe reconsider. But yeah, The Flash was supposed to be the savior. It was supposed to carry the whole goddamn DC universe on its shoulders, and now it basically took it out back and shot in the fucking face. So after Blue Beetle, I guess it's they're hitting the reset button. Not sure what that's gonna look like, but James Gunn has a tall order. Hopefully it works out for him. We have Infinity Pool coming to us on 4K. Slightly delayed release, because this did already get a Blu-ray release a few months ago. But my buddy Brad from the Cinema Speak podcast, he was very right to hold out hope for this, because he got his wish. This is not only 4K, this is also the unrated / uncut version of the movie. So I'm fairly certain my buddy Brad already has this, or has plans to buy this. This comes to us from Brandon Cronenberg. We talked about Papa Cronenberg earlier in this episode, David Cronenberg. But this comes to us from the son, Brandon. Features Alexander Skarsgård and Mia Goth, as well as a couple other people. I haven't seen this, but now that we have the super duper uncut version of it readily available, now might be the time. I don't know how many films Brandon Cronenberg has made, but I did see Possessor finally, and it was pretty good. So I have some confidence in the man, and Brad spoke very highly of this movie. So maybe a blind buy from me. Maybe. We'll see. We have Staying Alive coming to us on 4K from 1983. This comes to us from Trivia Factoid. I'm not sure if you were aware of this. I was. This is directed by Sylvester Stallone, post Rocky III. So he was riding very, very high, perhaps literally at the time. He does have a cameo in this film, and this is about a stage show. This is about the main character. This is the sequel to Saturday Night Fever. Again, if you're not aware, I was aware of that. I'm not sure if you were. But yeah, this is the sequel to Saturday Night Fever, and this was kind of like a gift to John Travolta in some ways, where apparently he was overweight and depressed, and Stallone told him, hey, buddy, you gotta get back in shape, and I will direct this movie for you. I will flex my muscles in Hollywood to get this movie made for you if you can get jacked. And he did. John Travolta is super jacked in this movie, but it's about a stage show. So it's about that character, I don't remember his name, from Saturday Night Fever, joining a dance troupe and doing a big stage show. Frank Stallone has a song. Internet Toilet Frank Stallone. Not a good person, but he has a lovely song in this movie called Far From Over, I think is what it's called. Look it up if you want your heart to explode. Like, if you're currently using cocaine, maybe stay away from the song because it will cause your heart to explode. Moving on, though, we have Elizabeth from 1998 dropping on 4K. As well as Hustle and Flow from 2005. We have No Hard Feelings from the year 2023. A lot of comedy, like high-profile comedy releases this month. This was Jennifer Lawrence in the very, very raunchy comedy. As far as I understand, it's not bad. Like, I've heard mostly good things about it. We have Killer Condom from 1996 coming to us on fucking 4K from director Martin Walls. And, okay, I am going to read this paragraph of text. I'll try to be quick. In one of the seediest parts of Midtown Manhattan, strange things are going down at the aptly named Hotel Quickie. The male patrons who use the establishment as a playground for their every sexual whim are mysteriously getting their genitals bitten off, with bizarre claims abound about a carnivorous condom on the loose. Assigned to the peculiar case, Sicilian-born cop Luigi Macaroni... is initially skeptical, but the matter soon becomes intensely personal when, during an encounter at the hotel with a young rent boy, he himself is attacked by one of the man-eating prophylactics, losing a testicle in the process. It quickly transpires that the Big Apple is being besieged by an entire army of ravenous robbers, and Macaroni must work to crack the case before the emasculation epidemic escalates. That sounds cute. It's from 1996, though. I would have expected that to be an older film. Sounds kind of like a Attack of the Killer Tomatoes meets Critters or something, but with like a raunchy twist. We have the Cardona Collection coming to us from Vinegar Syndrome. This features Beaks the Movie. Is featured prominently on the cover art. And the only reason I single that out is because I've long maintained that there is a Red Letter Media to Blu-ray pipeline. Basically, if it's been on Red Letter Media, if it's been showcased by the guys from Wisconsin, I'm not saying that there's any palms being greased here. Like, I don't think anybody's getting any kickbacks or anything, but there seem to be a lot of boutique labels that are mining the depths of Red Letter Media's YouTube content and going out of their way to intentionally seek out the distribution rights to those shitty movies, because now there's a demand in the form of, you know, fans, myself included, I guess, that might want to see those movies. And if you want to see those movies, it would be really handy if you could just get them on a brand spanking new Blu-ray or something. And I'm sure the rights to them are dirt cheap because they're not good movies. So there is some sort of pipeline at work. Not sure of the logistics of it, but I have noticed that quite a lot of movies that have been reviewed by Letter Media on YouTube over the years have been finding their way to boutique labels and Blu-ray discs. We have Taxi Hunter coming to us from 88 Films. This comes to us from director Herman Yao and stars Anthony Wong, which is, those are both selling points if you're not aware. Herman Yao is a very, very funny figure in the Hong Kong film industry because he started out doing the craziest, most raunchy, most gory and vile cinema imaginable. I think they're called Category 3 films. So he was doing like the equivalent of like schlock exploitation cinema in early in his career. But these days he made like four major Hollywood caliber blockbuster films in China. So he's like a Michael Bay equivalent now. Like he's like top tier budget guy these days, which just goes to show you like on time and on budget and having the right connections can get you everywhere, because he's not an outlier. Like this similar path in the film industry is represented in other areas as well. Like the aforementioned James Gunn, I started out this episode talking about him. Guy started at Troma. Now he's the head of creative at DC Warner Brothers. Oh yeah, and he also like he that that's where he started. That's where he is. And similarly, Takashi Miike, the Japanese filmmaker, a very, very similar path to Herman Yao. Started out doing direct-to-video, not schlock, but just like really wild, out there kind of shit. And now he's doing blockbusters and has been for years. Very, very in-demand director these days. So you never know. Everything's cumulative. You never know where it's going to get you unless you're Martin Campbell and you direct Green Lantern and nobody wants to give you gigs anymore. Moving on though, we have City of the Living Dead on 4K. This is from 1980. This is, I think, a Fulci film. Yes, Lucio Fulci directed. And who put this out? Cauldron Films. Still a label I have not gotten a disc from. But I know my buddy Brad, he's got some of their stuff. I think he spoke highly of them. We have Wakaliwood Super Action Volume 1 from AGFA, the American Genre Film Archive. Kind of a sleeper favorite label of my buddy Brad from the Cinema Speak podcast. I also do not have any AGFA titles, but this is good news, folks. Wakaliwood, I could be wrong, but I think that is the Ugandan film scene. They're responsible for making Who Killed Captain Alex, which is included in this box. So this is Who Killed Captain Alex plus Bad Black. If you haven't seen a Wakaliwood film or seen clips from one, look it up. It's just joy. Just pure unbridled joy expressed on film. It reminds me so much of making shitty movies in the backyard with my friends, but with like an extra layer of daring and polish that, you know, just requires balls and a strong community backing in order to get the job done. So that's really cool that AGFA's starting to put out Wakaliwood stuff. I might actually get that. We have one that's important to me and no one else. Kamen Rider Black RX. This is from 1988 to 1989. This is a television series. This is a tokusatsu, Japanese special effects television series in the still running Kamen Rider franchise. But this is the direct sequel to a series that I finished watching on Blu-ray a couple of months ago, Kamen Rider Black. So this is actually a direct follow-up to Kamen Rider Black. As far as I know, not as critically acclaimed. Kamen Rider Black holds the distinction as being like one of the, quote, best of the Kamen Rider series. RX, I've heard good things about, but not as good things about it. It's like, Something about the presentation of it, like you can tell that there was some merchandising going on. It's a lot more toyetic. There's a lot more transformations and gimmicks than were present in Kamen Rider Black, which is worrying for someone like me who isn't here for that as an adult. Like, I mean, the tricky part when it comes to appreciating things like this is that you have to always remind yourself that you are an adult watching a product intended for children. So complaints of that nature of like, oh, it keeps trying to sell me toys and stuff. It's like, well, you're not the person who this was made for. So, you know, maybe shut the fuck up and appreciate what you can and ignore what you can't. So I get that kind of vibe from this follow-up series that's probably going to start veering into that territory where I'm going to start being bothered by elements of the production being more focused on selling toys than telling stories. But unfortunately, that's kind of where all of this stuff inevitably ends up. I mean, as far as I understand, quite a lot of these long-lived Japanese franchises are more built to sell toys than tell stories. But I love Kamen Rider. I'm very, very, very excited that they're finally starting to release like anything Kamen Rider related in this region. And this was one that I was very, very excited about. I grabbed the Discotech Media Blu-ray set of Kamen Rider Black as soon as it was available, and you better believe I'm going to do that with this as well. So I'm very excited to buy this and watch this ASAP. We also have Black Magic Rites on 4K from 1973. Who's putting that out? Because it's getting a 4K. Powerhouse Films. Okay. Interesting cover art. Give them that much. I never heard of it, though. But it's getting a 4K. We have Journey to the Center of the Earth from 1977. This is from Severin Films from Juan Piquer Simon. That is a name that I know from Brandon Tenold on YouTube. Fun Canadian YouTuber that reviews schlock cinema. Juan Piquer Simon, I think he reviews quite a lot of his stuff. I have seen a Journey to the Center of the Earth, but not this Journey to the Center of the Earth, which is, it's adapted from the Jules Verne story, if you're not aware. We have, Jesus, there's so many. Heroic Times from 1983. This comes to us from Def Crocodile Films. Interesting cover art, very painterly. Kind of dig it. Not sure about that font, but that's a personal thing. We have Off Balance from 1988. This also comes to us from Cauldron Films. It looks like they redid the cover art for this guy, but it looks like they did a... I kind of like that. I really like the arrangement of the cover art for this one. This comes to us from Ruggero Deodato, whose name rings a bell. And before I click on it, I'm going to guess Cannibal Holocaust. I guess Cannibal... Yeah, I think he did Cannibal Holocaust. He did do Cannibal Holocaust. Damn, I'm good at this. Nobody cares, Trevor. Move on. Yeah, I like the cover art for that. Michael York's in there as well. Always liked him. Basil Exposition from Austin Powers. Tale of Tiffany Lust from 1981. That's coming on 4K from one of Vinegar Syndrome's many, many labels. At this point, there's so many of these, I'm just going to call out the ones that have cool covers. So The Last Match, it's a man in a football helmet brandishing an M16 with some fire, and it appears to be painted. Yeah, that'll work. I like that cover. I don't know what the fuck that is, but I like what we're doing. I like what you're selling. We have The Last House on the Left coming to us from Arrow. That's the 2009 version. We have a Burt Reynolds film called Malone from 1987 coming to us from Kino. We have a lot of porn coming to us from Vinegar Syndrome and their related labels. And you know what? I think I'm going to call it quits there, because the rest of it is porn and stuff that I'm not particularly interested in. So now comes the part where I go backwards through the calendar, and throw out any titles that I think I might be purchasing or going out of my way to watch in the coming weeks or whatever. So for the month of August 2023, Kamen Rider Black RX, I am going to get that. I'm going to get that, and I'm going to watch it ASAP. Infinity Pool, the uncut version. Not sure if I'll buy it, but I am going to watch it. I am on the Brandon Cronenberg train. I am on board to check out whatever he puts out these days. Not sure if I'm going to point buy that one. Definitely checking it out, though. Gorgo, I might buy that. It's been long enough since I've seen it that there's blind spots in my memory that, you know, it would be fun to kind of fill in. And remember, the only time I ever saw this movie repeatedly when I was young was via a bootleg VHS, like a second generation copy of it. So the image fidelity was not there. And Vinegar Syndrome has a stellar reputation for cherishing these, you know, forgotten films. So I'm sure it'll look fantastic in 4K. Wow. I think that was a whole week where I didn't call out anything. That's not good. Junkhead, that Japanese stop-motion animated film. If I find it for the right price, I might just grab that. Just because, again, I am invested in that medium. I'm endlessly entertained by stop-motion animation. So it wouldn't upset me to check it out. The Machine, I will watch that if I have to review it. But beyond that, no. Asteroid City, I will watch that probably with the girlfriend or something, but I'm not going to own that. Fast X, already paid for it, haven't gotten it yet, but yeah, I will have all of these Fast movies eventually, whenever they decide to stop making them. Dragon Ball Z, I need to do some investigating on what's going on there. And Guardians of the Galaxy 3. Yeah, I'll get it eventually. I get all the MCU movies eventually. So yeah, aside from Kamen Rider Black RX, not a very enthusiastic month for me, which is unfortunate. But we did it, folks. So that is a wrap on August 2023 for catching up on Blu-ray. But in the meantime, if you'd like to catch up on any of our other Catching Up on Cinema content, you can find all of that collected on our website at catchinguponcinema.com. You can also find us on the social medias in the form of the Instagram at Catching Up on Cinema, as well as the Twitter at Catching Cinema, Twitter/X, excuse me. And also the podcast is available on pretty much every platform you can imagine, including Bitcade, so fucking Google it. And that being said, thank you so much for listening. We will catch you next time.